KPCW News Time 8:17. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, the Park City Board of Education meeting in a special regular session tomorrow, starting at 4 o'clock in the studio. With a preview of that agenda, I have District Business Administrator Todd Halber, along with School Board Member J.J. Ellers. Good morning.
Good morning.
First up, a number of hiring decisions. What are we talking about? How many positions here? Is this just the first of several hiring decisions?
So primarily, the hiring decision has to do with our Trailside Elementary School principal. So Robin Williams had taken a position with Murray School District, and so we're going through that process, or have been going through that process, and have recommendations for the board to review.
Okay, so you have a new principal coming online?
Yes, we're hoping so.
We hope so.
And you can't mention that, who it is at this point?
At this point, it's for the board to review and be part of that final decision-making process.
All right, somebody local or out of the district? Can you tell us that much?
Can't comment. Until after the board's decide. So after the meeting tomorrow, you can ask.
The board will also be getting details on what's being called a listening tour. Maybe you want to first talk, what is a listening tour?
So from the results from the bond survey, it became apparent to us that although the community is becoming, or understanding the needs of the district, they still aren't understanding the funding solutions, and so we've decided to go out on a listening tour and just try to listen to what people's concerns are and what their comments are and maybe their suggestions, and try to have some input from them, and then also maybe some discussion so that if they bring up something, we can bring up what we've already discussed about that and help people to better understand where, not only to feel like that they've been able to give their input, but also understand maybe a little bit better how we got to where we are. And it may mean that we change our minds and hear some great ideas.
So even though we're calling it a listening tour, there will be some talking, at least to answer some questions.
I hope so. Yes.
Yeah. So you're going to hear from Molly Miller and Lindsay Ferrari. She was the communications consultant, to provide the board some strategic steps in addressing the topics from this pre-bond survey. So, JJ, what do you think those biggest topics of discussion are?
I think the biggest topics are there's questions about how we're going to be spending the money and if it's the right amount. Having read the pre-bond survey, there's a lot of, I think, misunderstanding with the fact that the bond can only be used to pay for buildings and we can't pay teachers with it. Everybody keeps saying, pay teachers more. Don't build buildings. Use the money to pay teachers more. I'll pass a bond to pay teachers more. And we can't. That's not in state statute to be able to do that. So I think, and then I think that there's still questions about what to do with the high school expansion and then also what to do with at the elementary school level, I think are the big issues that we need to really, and where to put that school and what it's going to be.
So we don't even know how much money we're talking about for a bond, do we?
So we have outward ideas of what it could cost if we wanted to do everything that's been talked about. And those are some pretty large numbers and to some degree shocking numbers. And so this listening tour gives us the opportunity to really hone in on what is it that the community feels it needs for the education system. What do we need for the middle school solution? What do we really want to have happening at the high school? And then we can walk into what price tag does that really need to be to accomplish what the community is asking for.
Well, I think probably one of the biggest questions is how did we go from $62 million that paid for a high school expansion, a new 5-6 school, the demolition of Treasure Mountain, safety improvements at McPolin, and new athletic facilities, and now we're talking about something closer to 100, and we're talking about a new school and a high school expansion.
Sure. So there's different variables moving at the same time there. So the high school itself has come in at a different price tag than when we had started. Some of the confusion also has to do with the financing strategy of the last time that we brought a bond proposition forward. So we had only asked for about $56 million in that proposition, but we were bringing money from the school district's capital account into the mix as well. So when you start talking about what was being financed and what the project total cost was, they're not as far apart as it would seem because the project costs are comparable to each other. The elementary school has come in a little bit higher than the numbers we were using last time. Again, we're bringing in ideas that it's not just an elementary school, it's those upper grades of elementary school. And so the programming and how to deliver those classes, it looks a little bit different than just a straight-up elementary school. So there's additional costs, such as having a music department within the elementary school and things like that that you don't typically see in an elementary school. And then we had an element that had to do with land, trying to find future land opportunities for expanding the school district. And that wasn't in the earlier bond proposition. And that number is soft. We're not sure how much we need to buy or how many different properties might need to be considered and things like that. So the numbers have been left high just to make room for opportunities to decide.
Yeah, the higher bond amount, though, does not include athletic facilities, or does it?
It does not include athletic facilities per se. It mm-hmm. does have an expansion and improvement to the gyms within the high school. So those will be upgraded. They'll have better facilities for locker rooms and things like that. So that is an improvement and was part of the facility ideas that were in the proposition 2 years ago.
Right. This time it's just connected to the high school. The other thing is that we're actually getting, we'll be remodeling the area that's current gym space, so that we will be basically having to build new gym space. But it's connected to the high school, and it's really part of the, PE is a required class. It's not an elective credit. It's not a football facility. It's the PE, and then on off times it can be used for other sports.
But as we go out and listen to the community, maybe you hear that we should just do away with the high school and just build a new high school, since we're talking about maybe pretty similar costs, no?
And that's the advantage of going through the listening tour, is to discover that. And, if that is truly the sentiment, that the cost differential is so close that building new is wiser and a better path to go, that's what we want to hear. If the ideas are still, hey, it's a great location for the school, we just need to enhance the facility that's there, and that's what we hear from the community, obviously that would be the path we'd want to pursue.
And we're still bringing in, though, the $20 million or so that we've got in the capital.
Very much so, yeah. So once we understand the projects themselves, then we can talk about the financing strategy, what needs to come from where. But it's definitely available.
All right. Do you have all of the numbers nailed down then to answer questions, Todd?
I guess I'm not quite sure question.
Again, when we start talking about people coming and asking questions, we know how much this is going to cost and that's going to cost and what we're going to be asking for.
Sure. So design elements, we have rough ideas. So you never know the exact cost until you get down to designs and drawing the designs. Right now we're still at the conceptual level, still figuring out adjacencies and things like that. So we can get ballpark numbers, but we won't have a real refined number.
And have we even decided that we're going to bond this year? Is that still up in the air?
That's a decision that will be made in August, and that's part of the discussion that we will be having. We will begin having, I guess it's tomorrow, in the board meeting. We have some time for bond discussion, and then that'll also be part of the listening tour as we try to start listening in July and early August before we make that decision. That will help us better understand what our decision will be in August. We have to make the decision by
mid-August.
And then, Todd, that there is an agenda item as bond discussion that'll entail what?
So that covering basically what mm-hmm. JJ was talking about is we have a timeline. How much can we accomplish with the listening tour in the timeline we have in front of us, and what elements need to be part of that bond proposition?
So what are the dates and locations for the listening tour? Has that been identified?
That's what we'll be working on tomorrow.
So we'll be mapping that out.
Yeah.
All right. Again, it's summertime. People are here and there. How many do you think you'll hold?
Right now the plan is, and I don't have that in front of me, right now the plan is to have each person do one in their district, like at a somebody's house, and invite in, key members of the community in that district, and then to also have some others where there'll be like two board members at a time in different areas. And we don't know where those will be or what the dates will be for that.
So the idea is do less than a quorum so that you don't have to notice the meetings? Or
right. Right.
And not so much not to be to have to notice the meetings. It's just to have that more intimate conversation, to have more of the public there talking to the board members, knowing that we're on a shorter timeline, so we want to get out into the community as much as possible so we can have a lot of activity happening simultaneously, if you will.
Right.
Yeah. So is there going to be some scribe there, or how are you going to get all that information back to the rest of the board?
Yeah, we'll be capturing all that information as we have those conversations and then bring it back and circle back with the board and report in.
Okay, but we don't have any of those dates scheduled at this point, but they're all going to happen before mid-August?
They'll be happening through July, through August, and then there'll be conversations even after August into September and October.
Right.
So it's not just get ready for mid-August. It's the whole conversation with the community that we need to have in place.
Yeah, what's your sense, though? I mean, if you were to bet on it, are we going to have a bond on November's ballot?
You know, I think that we need some time to really talk about that as a board. And I'm not really ready to make that decision because right now I need to listen some to the community listen a lot to the community and also listen to my other board members and see what their feelings are on all this.
Okay. Anything else you want to mention?
I think we just want everyone to know that there's an opportunity to be connected into the Park City School District Community Link. So if you'll first text in your first and last name to 435-602-4444, we can keep you updated on everything that's happening at the school district.
Okay. Or go to the website, and it's there also.
Okay. JJ and Todd, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
KPCW News Time now. It's 8:30. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. The United Utah Party has filed a lawsuit against the Lieutenant Governor's office to get Jim Bennett, that son of former U.S. Senator Bob Bennett, on the ballot for the special election to fill Jason Chaffetz's seat in the 3rd Congressional District. Jim Bennett joins me now in the studio to talk about this new party and where things stand. Good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
I want to note that only our Wasatch County listeners are within the 3rd Congressional District. Those living here in Park City and Summit County represented by Rob Bishop in the 1st Congressional District. So you've thrown your hat in the ring, but not under your dad's party, the Republicans, but as a candidate of this new third party, United Utah Party. How come?
Well, you say it was my dad's party, but it was my party as well. I've been a loyal Republican for most of my life, but I decided I couldn't continue being a loyal Republican when the party that was near and dear to my heart for so long became the party of Donald Trump. And you look at my father's disaffection with the Republican Party, and it correlates perfectly with the rise of Donald Trump. I told the story many times of being in the hospital with him, where he pointed out, he turned to me, actually, and said, "Are there any Muslims in this hospital?" And I said, "I'm sure there are, Dad." And he said, "Well, I'd like to go up to every single one of them and apologize on behalf of the Republican Party for Donald Trump." So looking at the circumstances today of where the Republican Party is, it's just not something that I could align myself with. And I think if my father were still around, he would be supportive of my decision.
So tell me a little bit more about who is this United Utah Party?
Well, the United Utah Party started having conversations about it earlier this year, probably February or March. I was contacted by Richard Davis, who was the chair of the party, and he's the former Democratic chair of the Utah County Democrat. And he was frustrated by the fact that the Democratic Party has lost its way as well. That, after losing every statewide election for the past 20 years, you would think the Democrats would start reaching out to the center, but they've taken a hard left turn instead, and they're more interested in making statements than actually winning elections. So he was very frustrated by that, and I was very frustrated with the Republican Party, and we were talking, and he's been having conversations with a number of people, both disaffected Republicans and Democrats, who think that we need a third alternative for everybody in the middle, which I think is the majority of voters in Utah.
So it's more than just the anti-Donald Trump party, then?
Oh, absolutely. The idea is that we have a platform that's actually about one page long. And that's deliberate because we don't want to force anybody to take loyalty oaths. You know, every time I used to go to Republican caucuses, they would pass around copies of the platform and demand that you sign it to indicate that you agree with everything in it. And, you know, if you agree with everything in any platform, I think there's probably not a lot of independent thinking going on. So we welcome people who have different points of view on several issues. We live in a republic which is designed to require compromise and require people with different points of view to work out their issues in an environment where compromise is necessary to be able to achieve anything.
Well, let's talk about some of the hot button issues then. I mean, where does your party stand on the issue of abortion?
Abortion is actually an issue we have taken a stand on, and we are a pro-life party, although we think abortion is acceptable in cases of rape or incest or where there's a serious threat to the health or life of a mother.
So you would like to see Roe v. Wade overturned in some sense, allowing for those circumstances that you mentioned?
Well, Roe versus Wade, regardless of how you feel about abortion, Roe versus Wade, I think, represents a serious overreach by the court. And people don't realize that if Roe versus Wade were overturned tomorrow, abortion would remain legal in all 50 states. Roe versus Wade does not, all Roe versus Wade does is lift abortion out of the legislative arena. And I think one of the reasons we've had so much contention over this issue over the years is that it isn't one that we've been able to hash out in the legislative arena like anything else. It's been just sort of lifted out of the discussion by judicial fiat. So I would like to see Roe versus Wade overturned. And in some, to some degree, the impact on abortion is almost secondary.
And
I think the greater issue is the role of the judiciary and whether or not it's appropriate to have those kinds of things decided by judicial fiat instead of by the legislative process.
And what about the issue of same-sex marriage? I mean, it's something that Utahns had voted against and, of course, overruled by the Supreme Court here. But
right. The
United Utah Party, I mean, you stand by the Supreme Court's decision on this? Or?
Well, there's the short answer is it's done. Same-sex marriage is the law of the land, and that's not likely to change. And there's nothing in the platform that addresses that directly. From my perspective, as a candidate, I am very supportive of the compromise that was forged by the Utah legislature that drew praise from all sides, that, sustains anti-discrimination issues while at the same time balancing that with religious freedom.
And what about the issue of taking back federal lands? I mean, that's certainly a big Utah issue, and certainly we've got the support, I think, of our congressional representatives. How does the United Utah Party feel about that?
Well, again, a lot of these issues I can answer as a candidate for the United Utah Party. I've taken specific positions on many of these issues. The United Utah Party's platform is one page long and doesn't address specifics on a lot of these things because they want to be able to give candidates a wide range of latitude in how they deal with them. So from that perspective, I'm speaking as a candidate and I'm speaking from my own personal position on this rather than representing a blanket position for the party. I look at my father's efforts when he was working with Jim Matheson, Democrat on the other side of the aisle from him, on the Washington County land bill that took a lot of these contentious issues and brought every stakeholder at the table and actually forged a compromise that brought a conclusion to a debate that's been going on for decades, at least in Washington County. And his hope was that would become sort of a template for other counties to forge similar kinds of compromises, and unfortunately that didn't happen, and I'd like to be able to sort of pick that up where he left off when I get to Congress.
All right, and then I just want to also ask you about the issue of health care. I mean, in terms of the repeal and replacing the ACA, is that something, you know, that you also stand for, in support of?
I, well, I don't stand in support of any of the bills that have been proposed thus far. The goal of the Republicans right now seems to be just to repeal Obamacare just for the sake of being able to say they repealed Obamacare, whereas they haven't offered anything substantive of any value in its place. People don't seem, or at least Republicans don't seem to recognize that the pre-ACA status quo is not something to which we want to return. That was a mess. And the ACA is in danger of collapsing under its own weight, but we need to have a viable alternative for it if we're going to replace it. Repealing it isn't as interesting to me as finding a replacement or finding a fix that will make health care better. And right now what Republicans are proposing isn't going to do that. The American people seem to recognize that, and the polling demonstrates that they're firmly opposed to what the Republicans are doing right now.
Yeah, but I guess the picture you've painted for me, Mr. Bennett, is on these four hot-button issues, is you sound just like a true blue Republican here.
I do?
Yeah, you do.
My father was criticized, particularly on health care. The Club for Growth came in and dumped about $1 million into the 2010 campaign because my father had proposed a bipartisan health care bill that he had sponsored with Oregon Democrat Ron Wyden that addressed a number of things. It included an individual mandate, which Republicans now hate, forgetting that it was a Republican idea that was created by the Heritage Foundation as a way to stave off a single-payer system. So I look at all of those kinds of things, and those are the kinds of things that got my father and got me labeled as Republicans in name only, being called rhinos over and over again. So I think true blue Republicans might disagree with you on that. But I do tell people when they ask me where I stand, I quote Ronald Reagan, who said that the Democratic Party, he didn't leave the Democratic Party, the Democratic Party left him. And I personally didn't leave the Republican Party so much as the Republican Party left me. The principles that I had believed in that have been important to me haven't changed. But I think the party has changed quite a bit. I look at the party of Trump and, for instance, the issue of free trade. If the Republican Party stands for anything, it stands for free markets and free trade. And you have now a Republican president that insists that tariffs are the way to go, and he wants to start trade wars with China and everything else. And you look at that environment and say, well, the Republicans are willing to be really malleable on their principles there just as long as the guy with an R next to his name is sitting in the White House. So I guess that demonstrates the difficulty of applying traditional party labels in an environment that has been upended by the rise of Donald Trump.
And I just wanted to hit on this before I talk a little bit about what happened Friday, but I'm running out of time. But when you look at third parties, of course, we had Ross Perot's Reform Party. But really, who else has been close even when running as a third party candidate? I mean, you do this, and yet do you have any success to fall back on?
Well, sure. Well, you look at the 2016 election, and you had Evan McMullen pulling 22% of the vote in the state of Utah, which is really astonishing in what's supposed to be the reddest of red states. Dan Jones just commissioned a poll that we had nothing to do with, but the poll was, would you be willing to consider voting for a candidate from the United Utah Party? And the answer was that 63% of Utahans said yes.
Well,
I'm sorry.
I was just going to say that was only because we had Trump and Clinton and hated by both. I mean, I think that was why Evan McMullen was at all successful,
well,
if you call 22% successful. I mean, I think that explains that. It has nothing to do with the third party. I think if we'd had different candidates for a choice, that it would have looked a lot different. But
well, if we had different candidates, then I'd probably look a lot different. The fact that the Republican Party has morphed into the party of Trump is the reason I left. We are in an unprecedented environment now. You have a Republican president in Utah that has a negative approval rating. That hasn't happened in my lifetime, and it's happening now. The time right now is right for a party to come in and to some degree become the second party in the state of Utah, because the Democrats are uncompetitive here. The Democrats aren't even interested in winning elections. They aren't interested in fielding candidates that appeal to a majority of voters. So we see this as a chance to catch lightning in a bottle to some degree. Recognize it's an uphill battle, and I'm under no illusions on that. But I think if there were ever an environment where people were looking for another choice, right now is it.
Last month, you tried to file as a provisional candidate under this new party banner, but was rejected by the state elections office because the party had not been certified. So you went to court on Friday, and it sounds like you had some success there. What happened?
Yeah, well, so we've actually been before the judge twice. The first time was at a scheduling hearing about 2 weeks ago. And the judge made it very clear in that hearing, which was supposed to last 5 minutes, they just read on schedule. The judge made it very clear to the state that there was no statutory guidance as to how a special election was going to be conducted, and that the state is relying on arbitrary lines it's made up in order to exclude our party. And we had a fuller hearing on Friday. And in that hearing, the judge concluded the hearing by saying, so what you're saying to the state is that there's absolutely no way that the United Utah Party could have been on this ballot. And the state's only response was, well, if they had only organized before anybody knew that there was going to be a special election, then they could have been on the ballot. You know, when we started conversations about this party, the special election wasn't on anybody's mind. Jason Chaffetz hadn't announced anything that he was going to do. And we thought that our first opportunity to get on a ballot would be in 2018. And so there was no sense of urgency. And as soon as we found out that Jason Chaffetz was resigning, we stepped up. And we got all of the signatures to become a party in before the first deadline, but they weren't able to certify them in time. And then come back and say to us, well, there's just no way you could have participated. And the sense that I got from the judge, and I think that a lot of people got who went to that hearing, was that that's just not going to fly. And the judge is going to do everything he can to make sure that Utah voters have more choice, not fewer choice.
So will you be on the ballot for this special election for Chaffetz's seat?
That's up to the judge. We expect a ruling from the judge within the next couple of days. Based on my experience of that hearing and based on what I'm hearing from our counsel, I think my chances look pretty good that I'll be on the ballot.
Well, for Utah to become more than a one-party state, as we've been known forever, it'll be interesting to see how this moves ahead. If people want more information about the United Utah Party, what's the website?
The website is unitedutah.org. I also have a candidate website, jimbennettforcongress.com.
Okay. Hey, I appreciate your time this morning, Mr. Bennett. Thanks.
Thank you for speaking with me. I appreciate it.
It's 8:46. 8:47 now. Good morning. Well, at long last, and after several delays, the Summit County e-bike program is rolling out on Wednesday. In the studio with details, I have Caroline Rodriguez and Alfred Knotts. Good morning.
Good morning.
Morning.
Okay, so stations have been installed, but we still don't have bikes at those stations. When's that happening?
Bikes are going to be delivered to stations tomorrow, Tuesday.
Okay. They're on a truck?
Yep.
On the way to Utah?
Yep.
Okay.
On their way, ready for delivery. We did see a few kids trying to dock their tricycles in the stations, so they're already being used.
All right. The stations are where?
So, New Park Center, Tanger Outlets, Canyon Corners, which is the new Whole Foods location, Kimball Junction Transit Center, Canyons Transit Hub, Old Town Transit Center, Park City Library, Prospector Neighborhood.
And the Fresh Market?
Fresh Market on Park Ave.
Yeah, Park Ave near condos specifically.
Okay, so how many bikes? Like
88 bikes.
88 bikes between all of those locations.
Yes.
And then on Wednesday, what's actually happening here? We're going to have the official rollout, kind of the parliamentary
So on Wednesday, we're going to have what we're calling a bike rally, and we're inviting everybody to join both the Park City Council and the Summit County Council, and you can start from either the Old Town Transit Center or Kimball Junction Transit Center. Join us on a ride, and we're all going to meet in the center at the McPullen Barn.
Okay. Is it just first come, first serve? Who gets a bike?
Yes. Yep, exactly. But you're also welcome to bring your own electric bike or regular bike.
Yes, or transit. You can ride by transit. We'll be running extra buses also.
Okay, but there's no stops there at the McPolin.
There is in the vicinity. The Lime Route and the Pink Route do stop there.
Not the electric bus.
No. Yes.
Okay. So if somebody wanted to rent one of these bikes, mm-hmm. how's that going to work?
So they can the best thing to do is to log on to summitbikeshare.com and sign up for a membership now.
And what does that do?
So
a membership.
Yeah. So a membership right now, we have a few different membership options, but the best for locals and local employees is to sign up for an annual membership for $90. And that $90 entitles you to unlimited hour and a half rides throughout the year.
Okay. So there's no time limit on that.
There's a 90-minute time limit on your rides. But it's not like 90 minutes per day. You could take a 90-minute ride, run your errands for 10 minutes, and then take another 90-minute ride. So you can, as soon as you check a bike in, your time resets.
Okay. And then if it was just kind of a one-time use, I mean, what's that going to cost somebody?
$2 for a one-time use, a one-time ride.
And that's 90 minutes?
That's 45 minutes for a one-time ride.
So what if you wanted to go a little bit longer?
So if you go longer, then it's $2 every 30 minutes, and it automatically charges your card.
Okay. But you don't have to register. You could do all of this at the bike just with just a credit
card?
Most
of our stations have payment kiosks, so you can pay at the station as well. If for some reason you don't have a credit card or you don't use traditional banking, you can also sign up for an account and then use cash and put cash on your account at any 7-Eleven location.
All right. The bikes, they are capped at 14 and a half miles, and you can't go any faster than that?
Correct.
Even downhill, huh?
Yeah, they put a governor on them is what they do. So they do cap the speed downhill and uphill. Just to keep it safe and to make sure that we don't have a lot of conflicts with pedestrians and other bike users and dog walkers and things like that.
All right. And helmets are part of it, or you have to have your own?
We suggest you wear a helmet. You do have to have your own. It's not required.
All right. And then in terms of just the bike ride, I mean, there's been talk about they're stiff and big and not very maneuverable in terms of some of the bikes that you can get today on the market. Why is that?
I actually wouldn't agree with that. I think they're made for as a transportation option, so that's why they're a little bit bigger and a little bit heavier. It's to make the ride more stable and to make it more friendly to users of all types of abilities. When you're talking about the bikes that are on the market today, a lot of those are marketed so people can use them on single track trails or if they're allowed to, or use them for mountain biking, but that's not the purpose of these bikes. These bikes are made to be universally accessible to riders of all abilities, and that's why they're a little bit bigger and heavier.
And then what does that mean then in terms of people who can ride them? Do you have to be 18?
You do have to be 18.
Okay. Just because they are big, heavy bikes.
And the speed and everything too, because we had looked at installing a station at the schools and everything too on the Kearns campus. But there were some liability concerns. So it is an 18 and older age limit.
Okay. So if people are interested in joining you for the rally, what time do they need to be at the transit centers?
Rally starts at 11 a.m., so maybe a few minutes before.
Okay, and then you're going to take off from both places and then meet in the middle.
Exactly.
Correct.
And you're going to be then on the west side of the highway of 224?
Yes.
Or are you going to be on the east side and I guess just go over to the bridge?
Yeah, go into the tunnel if you come that direction, and then we'll be right in front of the barn.
Okay.
It's an exciting day.
Yeah.
A long day coming, so.
Mm-hmm. All right, ready to go.
Ready to go.
Hope that truck gets here.
Yep.
Okay, anything else, guys?
No, we just want to make sure the community embraces this. This is, you don't expect to turn into Amsterdam or Copenhagen overnight, but I think this is a good program that just builds off of an overall transportation network and provides options for people as well.
Okay, Alfred, Caroline, thanks.
Thanks.
Thank you, Leslie.
Okay.
8:54 now. Good morning. Well, keep your eyes open for a bill in the mail from Summit County. It's this year's $36 fee for your garbage service. In the studio with details, Tim Lumbey, the county's landfill supervisor. Good morning, Tim.
Good morning.
So some people, of course, feeling like they just paid this, but I guess we need to remind them that was for last year. This is for 2017.
That is correct. We had a bill that went out in December. That was actually for the 2016 cycle. Normally, it'll come out in July of each year, so you'll be seeing the 2017 bill by the end of the month.
Okay. So this pays for what, this $36?
This is our solid waste management for Summit County. Part of this is going to the landfill. We're doing a pretty major landfill expansion to meet current regulations and improve our environmental liability out there. Our waste collections costs are going up each year, and so we're trying to keep up with that. And then we're also setting money aside for closure of the facility once we get that landfill full.
Yeah, there was a recent story in the news how Utah cities and counties are quietly balancing their budgets by raising fees on electricity, water, stormwater fees in Utah and Park City. We've got carbon fees and pumping fees and water rate fees. So is this just another example of that? I mean, why a fee as opposed to a property tax increase?
You know, the lawyers and the council would have to answer that on fee versus property tax. But at the end of the day, it's county money that is necessary to provide these services. We're in a situation where regulations have changed, and then the cost of living in general has just gone up. And so we have to be able to cover those costs to meet our obligations.
So is there maybe some sense that this is more fair, giving everybody the same fee as opposed to people paying more because they have more expensive homes?
There is a sense of fairness to it. And it's also, you know, this fee applies only to residential properties. These are our full-time residents. You know, you have a house here. And this money is being set aside to go toward residential collection. This has nothing to do with any commercial accounts.
Okay. Where are we with the new landfill?
We are currently still excavating our new cell. That thing will be going out to bid sometime in the next 30 days. We hope to actually have it under construction this fall. We are down to about 14 months of life left in our facility as it stands right now. So we need to get this new cell built and online by spring at the latest, or we're going to be out of space.
Wow. I was thinking we were years, but we're down to months?
We are down to months. We are now piggybacking onto the old cells. I'm filling up my last bench right now, which will take about 12 months of life right there. Then I can put one more layer on top, and I'm out. It's very critical that we get this new cell built. And with the new cell, we're getting a double liner. You know, right now that landfill doesn't have a liner under it, so leachate just goes to the ground and ultimately to groundwater. With the new system, we'll have a double composite liner in there. We'll have leachate collection. We'll have a lot better stormwater management. Be a much more environmentally friendly facility.
Yeah, what's the total project cost on it?
This initial cell, just for the construction, the engineering's estimate is about $750,000.
Okay. We also do have a second one. This is the one near Rockport Reservoir that we're talking about, but we have a second one out in Hennifer, don't we?
Yes, ma'am. That's the Hennifer landfill. That's our construction and demolition debris landfill. That's our dry waste. That's our wood, you know, green waste, that type thing goes there.
All right. So there wouldn't be an opportunity if you, in fact, didn't finish it to haul garbage to Hennifer?
No, ma'am. By permit, we can only put construction debris over there.
So what about recycling? Is it making a difference now that we've got the curbside recycling? I mean, I thought we had another 5, 6, 7 years on the landfill because of recycling.
Recycling is making a difference. You know, one of the challenges we have is we're actually increasing our waste volume each year, so that keeps shortening the life. You know, this past year, Summit County managed almost 60,000 tons. That's up from 32,000 tons just, you know, a few years ago. So that shortens the life of the landfill. Recycling does work. The residents of Summit County are actually doing a very good job with their curbside recycle percentage. Even though we're only collecting every 2 weeks instead of every week, we're only running about 10 pounds a month under what the every week collection is producing down in the valley. So Summit County is doing a really good job there. We're diverting about 10% of our waste right now through recycling. We would like to pick that up, and we are currently looking through our solid waste management planning efforts at how we can increase recycling and increase diversion from the landfill to get more life from it.
So there were some issues with people not paying the bills that went out in December.
Yes.
Have you gotten them to pay up?
No, we haven't. We really appreciate those who have paid, but we still have about 1,200 that have not paid. You know, some of those are folks that just simply refuse to pay, period. They see it as another fee, and they're just not going to do it. Some of those are addresses that people have second homes here. They live out of state, so we have bad addresses now for contacting them out of state, so we're working through that process now. But it's about 1,200 folks still that have not paid the fee.
There was some talk about taking the garbage cans away, but that's probably not a great idea because the garbage is going to go somewhere.
We have it in the contract with our subcontractor who's handling all this to remove those cans, but that's problematic. When you go to a neighborhood and you have a line of 20 cans sitting on the street, one of those residents didn't pay, which can do I pick up? So what we're doing now, where we can identify the can, we're putting a sticker on there to remind people, hey, we have this fee. This is why we're collecting it. Would you please pay? How we address that moving forward is still under consideration, though removal of the cans sounds simple. Like I say, it's just a little more complicated than grabbing them and going.
Okay, so you get your bill paid. You can do it online. You can send a check in with a credit card. Pretty easy.
Yes, ma'am. We appreciate it.
Okay, Tim, thanks.